5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. Duh!
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, listener. It is, I think it's the Panic Room. It's got to be Thursday night, 9:30 Central, and it's episode 67. That was, we've got a bit of a 70s flavour this week because I just fancied, I'm a boy of the 70s and... fancied a bit of 70s music. That was the great rock and roll paedophile Gary Glitter, who, despite, you know, his faults with young children, etc., was responsible for, in my opinion, one of the greatest instrumental tracks of all time, which is Rock and Roll Part 2. Rock and Roll Part 1 was all right, but Part 2 did it for me, so there you go. I'm going to get hate mail now, but in fact, it was a while ago, somebody on Facebook from back in Britain actually said, you know, if you like Gary Glitter's music, you're a child molester. So not sure how he equates that, bless him, but there you go. But great piece of music there. So hey, I say we have a show. One person who can actually confirm that, I think she's on her way.
Come on, I'm with you. that guy.
No, I could play them as well all day. My trailer park queen, Xtina. How are you this evening?
I'm good. I was jamming out to that first song and not so much jamming out now. You know, I have to bring this up. I don't even know why, but there is this huge fly that keeps dive bombing me. I mean, like, I think he's out to get me or something. He's huge, and he just keeps dive bombing me. I don't know why. And
we had one in the painting above our fireplace. I thought it was a lizard at first. It's a fucking great big thing. And it must have been an inch and a half long, and I hit it with the swatter, and you heard it go crunch.
Oh, really?
It was just the most biggest, nastiest fucking fly on the planet. It was just like, but it's dead now. I put them down the waste disposal just to make sure. And grind them up. I've swatted them before and chucked them down there, and then they've crawled back out. You know, they've just been stunned. And they'll just crawl back out, which is not pleasant.
And he's big and slow, but I keep batting him away.
Well, there he is now. Get him. Get the blade out.
I'm hoping my dog will get him. My dog likes to eat the flies, and he does that chewing thing afterwards. That's really gross.
He will chew on a fly for ages. Stop that, you know. Nasty, nasty, nasty little dog. So anyway, how are you? How are you, my dear?
I have no complaints, so that's good. Except for, you know, I slept really bad last night, so I've been tired all day today. But other than that, you know, everything is rosy in the trailer park.
That's great, yeah, as rosy as trailer parks can get. Rosie, of course, is the lady in the trailer park next door but one, who cooks meth. She cooks meth in her spare time and breeds pit bulls. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You know, the funny thing, when you say that, the whole pit bull thing, the lady who, the couple, I don't know who they are, that live right behind us, their dog just gave birth to, like, I want to say, like, 11 pit bulls or something. A crazy number. And they're all pit bulls, and, you know, they would be, but... Yeah, so it's the whole stereotype thing, and they're really living up to it.
Actually, well, good on them. You know, it's a stereotype for a reason, you know.
That is true. But I try really hard not to judge, but they make it way too easy. They do. They really do.
It is all. It's like our good friend, the Commander in Chief. You know, he just makes it so bloody easy now. You know, it's not even challenging. I mean, this recent thing with Manafort and Gates, I mean, you know, surely he's got to see the walls closing in. You know, he's got his closest aides have been arrested for colluding during the election with Russia. I mean, for fuck's sake, you know, I mean, how much more is this man going to take before he... Although the problem is, you know, being a narcissist that he is, he will not resign. You know, they will have to impeach him and remove him. Then it's somebody else's fault. It will never be his fault, you know. So it's just, interesting to see which way it's going to go now. Whether they'll you know, throw him under the bus. Because he's very good at throwing other people under the bus, obviously. But, yeah, quite the way. And the best he can come up with is... what about Hillary? Well, no, this is not about Hillary, buddy.
God.
This is about you. You know, it doesn't matter what she's done at this point. This is about you and you alone, you know?
I saw somebody's post on Facebook the other day that, said something about if you're still, you know, man. You know what? Never mind, because I tell things horribly, and then, it's never funny. Like, I get the punchline messed up every time, so never mind. We'll just go on from that. I'm horrible. And it wasn't really even a joke, but it was just kind of funny. And it was talking about how, you know, he's still saying that the election was rigged, but he clearly won, you know, so, well, not clearly, but,
no, but
you know,
he
won, but he's still saying that it was rigged.
He lost the popular vote, yeah.
Yeah,
it's funny, again, whether it's fake news or not, but he's been allegedly been quoted as saying, you know, that Hillary deliberately lost the election just to make him look bad. You know, so basically, how can someone like her, someone as experienced and politically astute as her, lose to a cockwomble like me, which is a very roundabout argument. But he's got a good point. But yeah, he did lose the popular vote. The majority of the voting public in this country did not want him to be president. And all hail democracy, etc. But it's just one big mess. It really is. I mean, what happens if you impeach him, though? I mean, who's going to step into his place? Pence. I mean, he's a dickhead as well. I mean, they all are. They just need to be all, shooed away and just let the cockroaches have a go or something. Let the ants try it. They all get on. Ants, you never see them falling out and arguing and backstabbing. They just get in the little colony. They just get on.
Oh, it could be like some kind of really horrible reality show.
That is exactly what it is. He's a reality show guy. I made this point with somebody on Facebook the other day, and they were on about, Trump this. And I said, well, okay, put it this way, who would you rather have perform open heart surgery on your child? A qualified and experienced heart surgeon, or a bloke you met down the library? And it is exactly that. The guy is not qualified to be...
Yeah.
I mean, in England, you don't get to be prime minister just because you've got money. You have to, be an MP, and you have to be voted through the ranks, et cetera, et cetera. Here, as Trump has illustrated, any dickhead from the street or from TV can just march up, throw a lot of money on it, and become president. And it's wrong. He's not qualified for the job. And he's surrounded himself by people who equally are not qualified for the job. So, everybody wonders why we're in such a mess. And I still wait. The first thing I do in the morning is wake up to see if the bombs have started dropping yet, which is a worry.
Awful,
it's grim.
Yeah.
The thing, he's not doing anything to help the situation in Korea. He's making it worse. Past presidents have managed to just, let Kim do his thing and, not rise to it. And Trump, of course, being the big child that he is, has decided to start name calling fatty fatty toad boy and stuff. And it's not mature Trump. Quit tweeting shit. I mean, for goodness, that's how we'll find out that World War III started. He's going to fucking tweet it. You mark my words, it'll go out on Twitter. Anywho, it is Thursday night. Do we have a show, Xtina?
We do have a show.
As our listener knows, I just sort of turn up at, 9:10 and put my earphones on and wing it mostly. So, So what's going on? What is going on?
We have Isabel Blackthorne on.
Excellent.
And we have Bonnie Bennett.
Bonnie, she's been on before,
she's coming back. Yes. Yeah.
Good. Nice. Do we have Becky the reviewer as well?
We do. We cannot forget Becky. But
I tell you about that
her...
1 week. That
I know.
1 week
she's
I forgot
never
going to
let you
the
live
last
that
of that. I probably never will. Sorry, Becky.
I know. And I asked her yesterday, what do you have to review for us? She said, I don't know. So, we'll see what she's got tonight for us.
It's always exciting. It's like opening a Christmas cracker. There's always something jolly in it. And she's always happy. She's always happy, which is great. A little ray of sunshine. So,
and it's not even because she's drinking. That's the I don't know, sad part for me. I'm
need
happy
to learn
because
her secret.
Wine makes me happy.
You're happy because you're a happy drunk, which is fun. Whatever works for you, that's great. I'm miserable because I'm miserable most of the time anyway. So, but Becky is just always perpetually happy, which is, I envy her that, which is wonderful. Wonderful one. Anywho. I should have had a sound effect rigged up because our first guest is Isabel Blackthorne, who is on the line, hopefully, all the way from Australia. Are you there, ma'am?
I am. Hello.
Hello. Good day, sport. Put another shrimp on the barbie,
eh? I hope you can hear
me okay. Huh? Yes, we can. I'm just getting with the Antipodean flavour of the show. That's all, you know. Struth, it's in my stride.
I'm not that Australian. My accent's sort of 50-50 Australian and English. But you do sound terribly from Yorkshire there, James.
Do you know that's because I am.
See the diversity.
I am terribly from Yorkshire. I am.
terribly from there.
Terribly from Yorkshire. Yes, I am. So, hey, Isabel, it is fantastic to finally get to speak to you. We have corresponded many times over the past few months. So, how are you this evening?
It's actually afternoon for her. Isn't it afternoon for you?
Hang on. No. Listen, it's my show. It's evening here, so we go with that. Okay. Goodness sake.
I'm having a wonderful evening. I'm having a wonderful
Good.
Evening in the sunshine.
yes.
A few showers.
Excellent. That nice bit of evening sunshine. You've got to love it. So, Isabel, Xtina, be quiet. Just sit and drink, all right? Isabel is here to talk to us about her awesome, 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 awesome book, The Cabin Sessions, available now from Hellbound Books, publishing, LLC.com, et cetera, et cetera. I've had the privilege of reading this fantastic book, and I have to say it is one of the most eclectic, is that the right word? Disturbing books I've read in a long, long time.
Disturbing.
It is. It's what it sticks. Even now, it sticks in your head in a good way. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to spoil it, Isabel. Tell us a bit more about Cabin Sessions.
Well, it is disturbing. It was very disturbing to write it, I have to say. It's based on 2 years that I spent going to an open mic with my last partner. And I kind of had the bones of the story a few years ago. But he tragically passed away in the end of 2014, and the really bizarre thing about it was that he died of cancer very, very suddenly. Sort of, the book had been on hiatus, and his death released the story. It was as if I had his ghost hanging over me, you know, like all the notes we'd taken, all the characters that we'd half-crafted together, they all came alive. And so I started writing it again, like in his memory, you know, because, I mean, he's a muso, he's a host of an open mic, and everything about all the ins and outs of the story when it comes to the technical stuff, it's all down to him. And but then something really spooky came along. I needed to give one of the characters a sister, somebody else, you know, a sister.
Mm-hmm.
And this sister came to life, and as can happen in a lot of stories, if you write them more stream of consciousness style, she took over the story. Like, she just completely gripped it, you know, with two hands and said, right, this is what's happening. And out came all this backstory. Oh my God! And she's a weird one. Eva Stone, got the sack from her job at the post office, and her hobby is holding her breath in the bath. Where the hell that idea came from? I've just totally random. It's popped into my head. She holds her breath in the bath. She has her favorite techniques. It's quite a ritual. And she can manage, you know, a lot of time, 9 minutes and 23 seconds, I think. I think it was the most she's done, yeah.
Wow.
And so so the story kind of flips back and forth, you know, like you get the scene in it's Christmas Eve, a dark and stormy night, you know, gothic tropes and all that stuff. These 12 characters, you know, all of them bizarre, all of them distinctly unlikable and really screwed up. And they're kind of locked in the cabin as the storm raises outside. But then it cuts back to Eva Stone and her weird habit of holding a breath in the bath, and this fixation she's got in trying to remember her childhood. And it all comes to a climax in the end, a dramatic climax in the end.
That sounds really fascinating.
Was I interrupting while you were talking? I do apologize.
You were, yeah. I remember when we had the Facebook like event, the party thing, and I would read all the different, you know, the excerpts and everything when Isabel was talking about, you know, how the book came to be, and it really really is very fascinating. I love the story. So
The characters are so well formed, you know. You sort of, I think that's why it sticks in the head, because you know, it's like people you knew, you know, people you know, and you think, well, I wonder what happened to them. But yeah, it is, you know, it's about the characters. I mean, the circumstances that they're in is, it was circumstantial, I guess, but it is. But you just get that invested in the variety of characters. I used to do comedy open mics many years ago, so I'm familiar. I played some absolute crap holes. There's one place we used to have a regular open night, and a good friend of mine, a comedian friend, actually found a human tooth on the table. That was place it was. Literally, we just sat there with our drink. What is it? Oh, it was literally a human tooth, and that was the kind of place it was. It was great. Identify with that sort of place, and I think, you know, Isabel's sort of captures it brilliantly, absolutely brilliantly. You know, it's just obviously you've been dragged around a few of those in your time.
Well, you know, if you attend an open mic every week for 2 years, you get to see all kinds. Yeah, I was dedicated. Well, you see, the thing is, when you live with a musician, like that was his regular gig. We used to go up there. And he couldn't drink. He didn't drink alcohol. So, you know what a rider is. When you have a gig, you get free booze from the venue. Well, I drank the rider. So I would sit there with my bottle of red wine, getting through it, you know. And just, you know, I'll be there from 7 in the morning to 1 o'clock the following morning. These are huge nights, absolutely huge. And They even recorded a CD of the regulars, you know, a song each. It was quite a going concern. And then, of course, you can get a little bit wicked. You know, you tease out, exaggerate. That's what you do. You tease out little quirks, and then you exaggerate them, and that's what comedy does. And there is that that side to the cabin sessions. It certainly made me laugh, particularly Juan Diaz, the replacement host. There's quite a few in there that make me laugh.
Well, I want to hear more about it. Do you have a reading ready for us?
Well, I do, I thought I would read the opening section of Eva Stone. And she's moved back to Burton, and she's staying in her brother's house, Philip Stone. And Philip Stone is one of the regulars at the open mic.
Okay.
So this is how it goes. This is how it goes. There's a lonely thread in my pink quilted bedspread. I can't help picking at it, wiring it free. As the stitching unravels, I desist, and smoothing out the satin fabric, I sit up. Facing me is my own image, reflected in the winged mirror of my white-painted dressing table. I look to the row of dolls lined up on the high shelf above, legs dangling, the dolls of my childhood, staring straight ahead with their big doll eyes. In the center is the odd one out, a rag doll with woolen hair in bunches, a floppy doll leaning on the shoulder of the big mama on its right. Good or bad, omens come in peculiar ways. I wonder what the ragdoll would think about that. This omen is surely good. My first day back, and I've achieved a new personal best. All the better, for I had not been expecting to manage so long after the labours of yesterday. There'd been the packing and then the moving and then the goodbyes. I felt no sadness bidding farewell to the house share, tired as I was of petty nonsenses. Whose dishes were still in the sink? Who was holding the bathroom again? Always me. There's only so much blaming and nagging a person can take, and women in question shall remain locked from my heart as those strangers. It is true that I spend long periods in the bath, for where else am I to train? Holding one's breath in the air of a room or outdoors isn't the same. It's a question of focus. Very active submergence intensifies the experience, rendering it far more confronting. It's my sport, and today I achieved a magnificent result. Breath holding may seem an unusual pastime, especially for a non-freediver like me, but so is bungee jumping in my view, a pursuit my housemates raved about after a holiday overseas. Leaping off a bridge with a rubber band tied around your middle, where's the challenge in that? You bounce around a few times and someone in a boat comes along and unties you. Where is breath holding? Well, there is nothing to compare. Not a pastime for the daredevil. It requires endurance, persistence, and an ability to resist the desire to exhale. There's something satisfying in dwelling at the brink of panic and not allowing it sway. So thrilled was I when I finally raised my head this morning and saw the time that I leapt out of the bath, dizzy and gasping, rapture coursing through every cell of me. I came straight to my bedroom to record the feat. 9 minutes and 23 seconds. Half the world record for a woman. But then, I do not partake in lung packing or hyperventilation. The new Buddhist meditation technique I've been using is beneficial, and I'm finding that I enter the zone far more quickly as a result, that I put down my triumph to my remarkably relaxed state of mind. Now I'm here. I must also attribute some credit to my brother, Philip, for creating a spectacular bathroom. He has converted Aidan's old bedroom, which adjoined the original bathroom, knocking out a large section of the wall. The result is palatial. There's a window set in the eastern wall overlooking the magnificent tree-filled valley with glimpses of the river at its base, and there's not another building in sight. No need for curtains, although a feminine touch wouldn't be amiss, and I've already conceived drapery of the finest chiffon in yellow or pink, possibly both. Emotion came to me while I was in the bath. And what a bath! Large enough for Rebecca and David at once, and lacquered in the deepest sapphire. It was as though, when submerged, I was in the ocean itself. And looking up at the wall tiles, I was beholding the sky on a lovely, sunny day. He was very clever and imaginative of Philip, who created space evocative of the vastness of the ocean and the heavens, especially here in Burton, a village that bears witness to a grey slit of sky way up above the mountains. Mountains that clip the wings of all Burton's inhabitants. For it is a universal truth that you are where you live, not what you eat. Food may affect physical matters, such as weight and health, but location affects the psyche. Desert people, mountain people, river people, they all see the world differently, think differently, know differently, and experience differently. Holidays, those happy changes of environment, are respite from all that one is. I have oft heard it said that when you move house, your old self relocates with you, which explains European gardens and far-flung climes. But these are merely vestiges of an old self clinging fast, resisting the emergence of a new one. Then there are the city dwellers, those indecisive vacillators whose psyche is at odds with the habits of millennia, somewhat uprooted from the fundament, aimless butterflies dancing hither and thither in their cars. And of course, there are the homecomers, those who go back. It's always to complete unfinished business, isn't it? A task to be undertaken before one again leaves, this time never to return. Even if one has no idea what that unfinished business might be. Perhaps compelled by an inner need, the task at hand, an exhumation of a memory, a felt pressure, as if deep below the earth, captive in its coffin. The body bangs and yells. It's time. I've come home after 10 years and 4 months toiling at the post office of a small postal town right on the river mouth, some 30 minutes by train from the city. My workday spent in the sorting room while the proprietors, Jacob and Ruth Cartwright, attended to customers out front. A satisfying job made loathsome by the Cartwrights. I love to hold the light, crisp envelopes from places abroad, run my fingers over the address on the back, or gaze at postcards with their images of castles and cathedrals and old ruins. Best of all, the stamps themselves, stamps of birds and butterflies and flowers and boats and buildings and famous penguins. Marvellous stamps with their marvellous francs from places I've never heard of, like Cape Verde and the Azores. But my philatelic interest didn't gel with the stuffy old Cartwrights and their stuffy old ways. They were forever hurrying me along to meet an arbitrary deadline, reprimanding me for dawdling when I was smiling at some foreign letter in my hand. To make matters worse, every day there was a new address to remember. Don't put Michelle Brown in box 33. They stood up and she's collecting her mail from the counter. Or Bill Platt's no longer on the estuary mail run. He's moved in with Louise Quant to box 49. Then there were the new arrivals to contend with and the redirections. The deaths were never a problem. Some family member or friend always seemed to take charge of the drop point. The dead man's mail redirected to the box of a son or daughter, or remaining in its own box, relabeled deceased estate. The stamps lived on, and that's all that mattered to me. So I was sacked. Or rather, I'm afraid we have to let you go. Ruth had said that, with Jacob standing beside her. I'd been let go of. And it did feel like a relief, for it's wonderful to be back among the mountains. Mountains are special. The mountains that trap also protect, and this is why I've returned, to relax and be still after the vicissitudes of the post office and the house share, to retreat to a place where the nonsenses of modern life can't reach. Yes, this is surely why I've come back. This, and nothing more. Not surprising, then, that I was as eager as a child before a Christmas tree when I saw the bath. Philip's glorious sapphire bath that sits on its claw feet in the centre of the room, a watery throne on a dais of fine Italian tiles of talcum indigo, laid on the diagonal, perfectly edged along the one step that follows the curve of the dais. Tiles on the floor itself, indigo, inlaid with iridescences. It's like walking on night. She's as mad as a cut snake, isn't she? Oh, no. Hello?
Hello?
Is it
hello?
Over? I was just listening. I was so caught up.
I was enjoying that. You can't stop that.
I know. And occasionally she would pause in the reading, so I thought, you know, we're just pausing for a second there.
Yeah. So I've got to ask, Isabel, I mean, where did the idea for the breath holding come from?
I have absolutely no idea, Jane. None at all.
Oh, really?
Wow.
I
like that answer, though. I do.
Hey, no, that's a good one. You know, I'm just... You know, I think as kids, I mean, it's something we used to, I mean, we're not underwater. We used to hold our breath and see who could hold your breath longest. I mean, that's something that kids do.
I don't remember
doing
that. No, I didn't do that.
No, maybe it was just us there. I mean, because we didn't have PlayStation in those days, so that was our PlayStation. But obviously there are people who do actually, you know, do it competitively, you know, the free divers and whatnot. But it's such a nice, it's just a nice different trope that Isabel's put into the book. That I think it shows for me, you know, the protagonist has a sort of a, she's trying to gain control over something in her life. I think her life feels out of control for her, so that's something that she can she can try and manage. Again, I'm not going to spoil anything. You know, the whole novel hinges on one specific incident. And don't worry, Isabel, I'm not going to spoil it for people. You know, and everything radiates out from that. And I think that again, if I'm wrong, I apologize. But I think, you know, the character trying to control her breath is just trying to gain some control over her life from this one incident. Which yeah, I mean, I say it's beautiful, beautifully written. You know, it's So I'm gushing now.
Thank
so I'm going to be quiet now. I'm going to embarrass Isabella. I'm going to be quiet now.
It's the thing as well for me is it's neat in the sense that Philip Stone, her brother, is a plumber, and so there's the scene of water, and
yes.
Well, obviously he's dealing with some dirty water, drains, blocked drains, and a lot of blockages. Actually, I'm not going to spoil it either.
Yes, but, don't give it away.
No, don't give it away. But yeah, water. Interesting. Mm. It's hard not to give things away. It's hard not to spoil things.
But yes, water definitely runs through the whole thing.
Well, the thing is, I started with the original story was just the open mic. I mean, when she came along, because I wanted to create some texture, I needed a character that was going to tell the backstory of this bunch of freaks, you know, in this weird little town of Burton with its narrow slip of sky, you know, which is actually based on somewhere real. I used to live down the road from a place called Warburton, which is a little bit like Burton, in that it's got its in a cleft of a valley with mountains, you know, perhaps not quite as high as the mountains I visited for Burton. Warburton also has a curious kind of history, you know, of strange religious cults and one road in, one road out, you know, so people feel, you know, kind of trapped, penned in. Interesting concept. Lends itself to horror very nicely. And so she tells the backstory, and she does it with finesse, I think. I really enjoyed Eva Stone and everything she had to tell me. It was a little bit like being haunted, though. I used to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning in the winter, and it was all dark, and I just handwrite whatever she had to say. It's like automatic writing. And I said, "Oh, okay, right, here's a go with that." Yeah, it was all her. It all came out of my unconscious. I didn't premeditate any of it.
Well, that's amazing, which is why, I mean, it comes across on the page as, you know, you're reading the thoughts of a real person. So it's obviously worked for you. Getting up in the wee hours to write it down has worked for you.
It did. I'm not sure I'll do it again in that fashion, although something about horror... You know, there's something about when I get in the zone, because I write other things, but when I'm writing this dark fiction, I just love the pen and paper and just letting it flow and letting these characters develop themselves and not having that kind of control of plot and, you know, facts. Facts.
Yeah.
Very, very, very limiting. In fiction, facts are, like historical fiction, very hard. It's so factual.
Well,
so that's what I love about horror.
I'm having such a great time listening to Isabel talk right now. I would love to do 11 questions with her. Can I do 11 questions with you, Isabel?
Sure.
Yay! Do we have the little jingle, James?
I'm trying to find the little jingle. I've lost it now. I've lost the little... Where's the little jingle? Here we go.
And now, 11 questions.
Okay, number one, what's your guilty pleasure?
My guilty pleasure? Whoa, chocolate.
Good answer.
Good answer.
Everybody loves chocolate.
James is always going on about chocolate. So.
Yeah.
Baked beans, ranch style or pork and beans?
talking beans. What's the question?
Whether you like ranch style or pork and beans. Yeah, I think he's making that one up too.
No,
so
it's a Texas thing.
I think I have to go with pork and beans.
Just because you don't know what the ranch style is, right? Because I don't know either, so I had to say pork and beans too.
I'll send you a picture later.
I saw the picture. You know, it could have been photoshopped. You know, I don't know. Okay, puppies or kittens?
Kittens.
I don't accept that answer. Yeah, you know, I mean, but they have the little claws. They'll claw you up. They don't even care. You know, puppies don't do that.
I've got a gorgeous white cat, and I had so much fun with her when she was a kitten. I like timid cats, white cats.
What's your favorite lunch meat?
My favorite, sorry? Finding it a little hard to hear you.
Oh, your favorite lunch meat?
Lunch meat? Lunch meat? Oh, I'm pacing the floor now. I can't decide. It's got to be ham. Ham. It's always ham.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's nice to hear somebody being passionate about ham. I love that.
Right.
Yes. Oh, on the bone, cut with a beautifully sharp knife, preferably honey and mustard.
Nice.
Now I'm hungry now. Thank you.
What was your first car?
My first car? I'm trying to think back. Oh, yes, I do know. It was an old bright yellow, this is one for you, James, a Postman Pat post office van.
Oh,
and
wow, yeah.
I drove I bought it in Devon, and I drove it all the way across Spain, loaded up with books and records and a windmill, got 100 kilometres from Cadiz, and the drive shaft broke, and we were en route to the Canary Islands, and we got it on the truck, and we got it on the ferry. We had a lot of trouble getting it off the ferry. I don't know where it is, but I don't think it ever left the Canary Islands after that sort of thing. That was my
Excellent.
First car.
Yay,
yeah.
Postman Pat, I love that.
Let's see. What do you fear most, snakes or spiders?
Snakes, absolutely, without a shadow of doubt. I mean, spiders, you know, here's the thing with spiders. You can have your aerosol can to the ready, and you can spray them. And if you really, you know, you just keep spraying, hold the thing down until they go white. Because completely white. You're in control. You are a complete control. Snakes, you're not in control, and the aerosol won't work.
No.
I'll try to remember that as I'm freezing in terror when I see a spider. I'll try to remember I'm in control of the situation.
Just get the raid on it sorted.
Yeah. Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead?
Pinhead or what?
Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead?
I don't know the answer to that one. I don't know who these people are.
You don't know who they are? And you write horror? What?
Well, I look like a recluse.
Oh, okay. So we'll just pass that question. first draft, handwritten or word processor?
Oh, no, handwritten. Best handwritten. It's all possible.
Wow.
Comes out better that way. Oh, yes. But the typing up of that handwritten is a real nuisance. It's really annoying. You know, because there's a lot of it. I'll need a secretary.
Favorite alcoholic... I'm sorry. I thought you were... favorite alcoholic drink?
Oh, there's so many to choose from. Where would I start? A good French red wine.
Ooh.
I like it because it's nice, heavy. I want heavy, mm-hmm. full body, nice, because it makes you feel relaxed and sleepy. But if I'm going out and I want lots of energy, then it will be bourbon and Coke, because you can drink that all night and stay up. Champagne, of course, if we're celebrating. A nice dry champagne. Gin, of course. If I happen to be in a gin palace, it's gin all the way. Mm-hmm. Do I go
so,
on?
So basically, the answer to that question is just drink. Just drink. I like it.
No,
I
James.
Like it.
sweet cider. Everything except sweet cider. Sorry. Sweet cider. I cannot stand it. Awful.
Okay, let's see. One interesting non-writing related fact about you.
I've had two first names and six surnames at last count.
Wow, that is interesting.
Show off.
Confused about my... Yes, I'm showing off. I get confused about who I am.
I can imagine with all those names, yeah.
I like that answer.
I got told off last time I changed my name. I got told off by the woman behind the counter who told me, you can't keep doing this, you know. And I said, I can.
Yeah.
But I'm very happy with the one I've got.
Out of time for our first segment, and it went by so fast. Can you tell us where we can find you online, Isabel?
Find me where?
Where we can find you online.
Hello? Oh, yes, you can find me at isabelblackthorn.com. You can find me on Facebook with Relative Ease. I'm on Twitter, Isabel. I think I'm Isabel B sometimes. I'm all over the place. Just Google my name. I'm everywhere.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
And we will have to... You have to promise to come back and see us.
Oh, I'd love to. I've really enjoyed this. I mean, how amazing. My first international telephone call in 15 years. Quite exciting.
Awesome. We're honoured. And it's been, on a personal level, it's been fantastic to actually get to talk to you. In person, so thank you so much for that. It's been wonderful.
Thank you, James.
It's been wonderful.
Thank you very
much. We will see you again. Well, we'll speak to you again. We'll probably be emailing tomorrow, but we'll speak to you very soon. Okay, Isabel. Bye bye.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Good day. There we go. Fair ding on Waller. What's that skip? Sonny's got his dick caught in the refrigerator again. I grew up on Skippy the Bush Kangaroo, who incidentally was not actually a kangaroo, it was a wallaby. So that's my childhood ruined. So we're going to be back in 2 minutes and 16 seconds. So it's going to be the world's quickest wee.
Riding on out like you were a bird, flying all out like an eagle in a sunbeam, riding on out like you were a bird. We're a tall hat like the druid in the old days, we're a tall hat and a tattooed gown. Ride a white swan like the people of a bell dream, where your hair long, did you come go wrong? Star and a pigeon on your forehead, say a few spells and baby there you go. Take a black cat and a sip it on your shoulder, and in the morning you'll know all you know. We We're a tall hat like a druid in the old days. We're a tall hat and a tattered star. Ride a white swan like the people of a building. Will you hello, baby, come go far.
Welcome back to part two.
Well, that was the world's fastest wee. that was a very short song, Mark Bowen and T-Rex from 1970 something or other. And interesting fact about Mark Bowen. Do you know what Mark Bowen's last hit was?
No, I have no idea.
It was a tree. Oh, there you go. A little bit of sick humor there.
That's awful.
1977, he died around the same time as Elvis. Of course, his death was overshadowed by Elvis. But big Mark Bowen fan back in the day. He was. You listen to some of his lyrics. He described himself as more of a poet than in a pop star. Obviously, he was a big pop star. But some of his lyrics are some of the best lyrics ever written. I mean,
very poemy. You know, is it very poemy?
He is incredibly poemy. I think you right up your street, right up your alley, if I'm allowed to say that on air. But anyway, around about this time of an evening, I like, I don't know about you, listener, but I like to listen to some of the other shows that are out there. And we're just going to dip into one now, see how they're getting on. Hello? Are we on?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
I'm here. Oh. I can hear you if you can hear me.
Oh, I'm here now. Hello? Who is this?
Okay. Are you
Hello. We've got an hour and 55 minutes left.
Wow, the time is going by so fast.
The time, we're having so much fun. The time's flying. Well, I think we'll leave them there for one of my favourite shows, Crack FM. And we'll listen in on them, I think, from time to time, see how they're getting on with the show, which is great. And I miss the dead air, I really do, from back in the old days. There's nothing like a nice bit of dead air, is there? Just
it's funny. After I don't even know. Like after like 2 seconds now, we can hear it.
It's good, isn't it? So anyway, what happens next? Oh yes, it is
Becky. Don't forget Becky.
I'm desperately trying to find a little thingy.
Hey.
Just keep talking. Oh, hey, I think we're going to review something. Oh, no. Here we go. Come on.
Hey.
Here we go.
Looks like it's time to review something. Oh, no.
Hey, Becky, it's all going wrong. It's all going wrong at this. I don't know what's going on.
I didn't do it. I swear.
It'll all be my fault. Everything's my fault at some point or other. But so, how are you this evening, Becky? Becky, the reviewer. How are you?
I'm fine.
I'm fine.
How are you?
I'm fine too. I'm fine, y'all.
Yes, y'all.
What have you fixings? fixing to get some fixins. sorry, I'm just getting to tech. I'm over in Australia. Oh, God. Yeah, what have you got to review for us this evening, my dear?
It's a book by Adam Vine called Work. It is...
Okay.
It's really, really good.
Uh-huh.
The story starts with a little overweight college kid who doesn't like pictures of himself. He lives in a really nice neighborhood, but the house that he and his buddies live in, you know, it's kind of run down a little bit, and they have a landlord who's kind of a slum lord. They're all sitting in the garage talking about all the parties they've thrown because it's their senior year when he hears someone crying outside. He goes outside, but there's no one there. So he goes over to the cellar door, and it has a brand new huge lock that they've put on it. And he's kind of afraid that they might have locked someone in the basement or cellar or whatever you want to call that thing. I refuse to go
in there. It's a cellar. It's a cellar.
Okay, it's a cellar. And I'm not going in there. So he unlocks it and goes inside. It's really dark in there, and there's just one bulb that hangs overhead. And while he's down there, he finds a really small tin box, and it has pictures in it. And they're from probably 20, 30 years before, but they're college kids, and they're taken inside this house that they live in. And he's like, well, this is really cool. And he turns around to leave, and the light bulb goes out. And so he's trying to find his way out, and he falls into this pit in the cellar. Now, he knows that this pit was not there the last time he was down there. So he finally claws his way out, and he goes back upstairs to his room and with the box, and he opens it. He's looking through all these pictures, and he really, really likes them, and one of the girls is really pretty. And he kind of watches the picture for a little while. And then he notices that the pictures are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when all hell breaks loose.
Wow, literally, more than likely. That sounds awesome.
But the whole picture changing thing, it kind of reminded me of Rose Matter. Didn't the picture change in Rose Matter, Stephen King's Rose Matter?
It did, yes. It was all hinged around the picture. Yeah.
Yes. It's a really complex story, and this author really brings it together nicely. There's a lot of different, you know, facets that come together, and you're like, oh, okay, that's where that came from. So, but he has a way of telling the story that it just makes it all work, and I really, really did not see the ending coming. I was shocked.
I love when that happens,
yeah.
I do enjoy that, yeah.
I'm like, oh, I know how this is going to end. And then I get to the end and I'm like, oh, how the hell did that happen? But you'll fall in love with these characters if you read this. And you'll feel for them, and you want this one to win, and then you want that one to win, and, you know, I mean, it's just really cool. This guy's really good.
What book was that again, and who's it by?
It's called Lurk, and it's by Adam Vine.
Okay. I've never even heard of him, I don't think.
I think I've heard the name, yes. I think I've seen him out there. We'll get him on the show. Get him on the show.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
It's Adam Vine is a pen name, and so he's got several books out. He sent this one to me and asked me, you know, to read it for review, and I've gotten some really awesome books that way. But yeah, he's really good, and yes, we need him.
Yes. Awesome. Do your job, Xtina. Get him on the show.
Yeah. Okay. I'm feeling battered here.
One of my favorite mammals, I have to say. What's your favorite mammal, Becky?
I don't know. I like them all.
A what?
This one. I like them all, yeah. And I have to pick this one.
You like all you like all mammals. It's a bit generalist,
yeah.
That, isn't it? Mm. Bit of a cop
yeah.
out, to be honest.
Well,
bit of a cop
I like
out,
pigs.
So, yeah.
I like pigs, and I like beavers.
Beavers. Everybody, oh, look, we're not like a bit beaver. I like a beaver.
Oh my.
I like ducks too, except they smell bad.
Well,
I had a friend that had
smell...
a pet skunk.
Oh, but well, they degland them. You can actually have them as a pet, and they take the glands out, so they don't spray
yeah,
the stink. So
a friend of mine had
yeah.
one for a pet. Her name was Flower.
Of course. Of course, we've all seen Bambi. Come on. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Well, look, we're gonna have to say bye-bye to Becky now, and we will speak to you again next week. And apart from that 1 week, I have not forgotten you since. I wouldn't dare. So
I know. Thank you.
And we will. Bye now, y'all.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you, Becky. Bye.
Bye. Bye. I love that accent. It's so awesome. It's so Gone with the Wind. So I can't mention that, can I? I think they've banned it everywhere because it's a bit racist. But I was saying earlier, I was reading some school districts in Mississippi have banned To Kill a Mockingbird, which is funny. Uh-huh. My son's actually he's got that. They start reading that in January for English. They banned it because it's racist and probably banned by people who've never read the book. Probably never even fucking read it. Read a book, people, apart from the Bible,
yeah.
which is all made up. It's pretend. Goodness
sake. I'm not going to get into a religious conversation.
Grow up. We're going to have to get some religious freak on 1 week and just have a really good argument, I think.
Oh, God.
Be fun. We educated our listener, but anywho, so what's going on now? What happens next?
We have Bonnie Bennett on. Yay!
Bonnie Bennett, that is fantastic. Hopefully she's there. Bonnie, are you there?
I'm here.
Hello!
Hi.
Hi. Are you, you're not ringing from Australia, are you?
No, I'm from Texas.
No.
Oh,
you yeah,
know, I'm not as interesting.
We always have all these awesome.
My interest waned. Whereabouts in Texas are you, Bonnie?
Houston area.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm. We've
We're
talked
neighbors.
About this
How
before.
Do you... Oh,
yeah.
No. I'm sorry. I forgot. Well, you haven't hit me up for coffee, so, you know, clearly you're not that bothered.
We still need to have a coffee.
We should do that. But I think there's a Starbucks in Houston somewhere. We could... there's one or two.
I'm sure there's many.
I actually read there's I think something like 75 wing stops in Houston. Can you believe that?
Wow!
Absolutely.
They're my favorite wings, and the fries are to die for. But
oh
yeah,
yeah
well,
they're
how,
awesome.
Howdy, neighbor.
Howdy.
No, I was going to say, we always have people on with these, like, amazing accents, and I spend the whole time just pretty much listening to their all, you know, their awesome accent, and week after week, and there's, you know, and then James, and then there's just me with, you know, my normal voice with absolutely no accent of anything at all. It's very boring.
That's how I feel. I'm like,
Right, and, you know, we have Becky on, and she sounds just... It's Southern Belle and just so adorable, and then it's just me.
I could just picture Becky with a big bonnet on and a big voluminous skirt and a picnic basket on a Sunday.
In my imagination, yellow
yeah,
dress.
And just you know going to the church picnic on a Sunday afternoon and everything. You,
like
Christina, I just picture living in a trailer, to be honest.
Oh, thanks.
So there's that.
Yeah, I could live anywhere. Honestly.
Mm.
Kind of vagabond soul, I guess.
I used to live in Texas. I think I've said this before, but I lived in
Don't build your part up. You don't live there now, so it's not big and it's not clever. Okay.
Who is excited? You're not, James. But were you excited that the Astros won the World Series? Are you excited about that? Bonnie?
Who, me or Jay? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No,
I
wasn't.
Awesome.
I couldn't care less.
I can't lie and say that, you know, like I follow any type of sport at all because I don't. But I was like, you know, it's kind of cool. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was.
But yeah, I think it's pretty awesome.
I was glued to my TV the whole time, you know, the whole baseball season. And now that it's over, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I'm going to have these crazy withdrawals. It's really bad. I think that each team plays like something like, I think it's like 160 some games per season. Guess how many I watched or listened to from my team? 160 some. So now that it's over with, I have all this time to do stuff.
What, like work?
Yeah.
Yeah,
like work.
Like work. Yeah, I can't ever get into it, but I do admire sports fans. I really do. I could never really get into like the sport thing.
Well, I'm not going to be able to torture James with baseball talk anymore.
I can wait till next season, thank you.
Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. So Bonnie is here to talk about her book, Stranger, and she does have a tagline, James. I just didn't send it to you. And the tagline is really cool.
No, it's not.
It's really cool. Beauty and the Beast with a horrific twist. How cool is that?
Ooh.
I know, I like
that
it.
Good.
Yeah, that's so, my baby. That's my one of my favorite babies, I think. So far.
I think we all have one of those too, yeah.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit more about it.
So, you know, whenever I first started writing it, I didn't really have the idea of writing a Beauty and the Beast spinoff at all. And it's not the typical Beauty and the Beast story. Whenever I started writing it, I started writing about this masked character, and he kind of had a different type of inner voice. His inner voice was his abusive mother, who was horrible towards him, or his abusive, his abusive mother. So, yeah, I mean, he's got this tormented soul, and he just became a baby of mine, but it kind of was relatable to Beauty and the Beast. And so this book or this story was actually what made me want to write the Happily Never After series, just because of this book. Because I was like, it would be cool just to take those stories and kind of just write it as my own.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it centers in on Gabriella, who is my main character. And she is my beauty in this book, but she comes from a troubled home, and one unfortunate night, she goes to a party, something bad happens, and she ends up getting badly injured and dumped off in the woods.
Oh, wow.
My Beast is the character, that the badly abused character that lives up in the mountains. His entire body's scarred. Like, he's got cigarette burns and scars all over his body, so he wears a mask to cover it because he thinks that he's hideous. And so he lives in this house in the mountains where he lives there alone because his mother passed away. But, so he's going through the woods one night hunting, and he comes across my other character, and that's how they meet each other. So he takes her up there to his house that's on top of Mount Bell, and him and her develop a very close friendship, if anything. It's kind of one of those books that's kind of just a mixture of different things. But, yeah, it's my most recent baby. Other than Snuff.
It sounds so good. Do you have a reading for us?
I do.
Yay! That's my favorite part. I get to drink more wine.
Okay. Abby, I scream out as I chase her through the fog. I watch her bald head disappear into the dreamy haze, and panic catches my breath and my chest. I stop staring at the dense fog as I stand in the middle of the nightmarish woods. Naked branches reach out to stroke me, and I flinch, freezing in place. I can still hear Abby. She's terrified as she stumbles through the darkest parts of the woods, looking for me, even though I was chasing her the entire time. Funny how dreams work. My lips snap open, but, of course, nothing comes out. This is a dream where I'm not allowed to scream. I hate these. The most terrifying thing is being frightened yet not being able to call out for help. I open my mouth again, but before I can attempt to call her name, I see headlights, and my heart drops to the bottom of my stomach. No, I whisper, staring at the two lights. They stay still for a time, then they're barreling towards me through the mist. I run for what seems like forever as the headlights gain on me. When I know that I'll be plowed down, I hear a shrill scream, springing into a sitting position as I grasp the loose fabric over my chest. My entire body is damp from the perspiration, and the brisk air shoots a chill down my spine as goosebumps spread over every inch of my flesh. Everything is black despite every effort to pry open my eyes. It's useless. Did I go blind? The sickening realization washes over me once the throbbing between my legs, accompanied by the overwhelming pain I'm experiencing in my backside, springs to the forefront of my thoughts, battling every whispered question ricocheting in my mind. My entire body hurts right down to my bones. Wincing, I run my fingertips along my rib cage. I'm wrapped in something tight around my abdomen. Suddenly, I feel like I can't breathe. I'm panicking and feeling around breathlessly, still unable to open my eyes. I'm whimpering between quiet sobs. I want to cry and scream, but every effort on my part results in a stabbing pain. It shoots across my ribcage like a boomerang, punishing me for my agony. I hear it again, the tormented scream from my dream. It must have been what woke me, and perhaps I should be scared. Yet the scream that I hear isn't out of anger or fear. It's a howl for help, a plea for an end to the suffering, the sadness. I've never heard something so heartbreaking. Listening intently, I remain painfully still. My breathing is shaky, but it isn't as labored as it was whenever I initially woke up. My heart continues to pound, though. I hear the steady beat in my ears. It's the only thing that accompanies the silence until he screams again, be it he, that, or a very manly woman. The howl has become a roar, and now I'm fucking terrified. I shriek, grabbing what I'm assuming is the blanket before throwing it over my head and curling into a fetal position, regardless of the pain that shoots across my ribs once again. I feel like the tears are collecting in my eyes, but they have no way to escape. That's when I realize that my face is about 3 times its usual size. Gently patting my swollen cheek, it takes a minute to find my meaty, feeling eyelids. They're so thick, protruding prominently from the rest of my inflamed face. My shaking fingers pry open my puffy eyelids, and what little light behind the thin white blanket is enough for me to want to close my eyes again as the hot tears stream down my cheek. But I don't. I allow my eye to adjust as I open it between my index finger and thumb. I use my free hand to slowly lower the blanket as my eye goes traveling. The cherry wood paneled walls don large paintings, each are of the woods. I frown as my eyes scan each intricate stroke of a brush. The colors are warm and inviting. I feel like I could walk into one of these paintings and get lost forever. It would be my own Narnia. Wind chimes that line the windows are oddities in themselves, each one seemingly crafted by hand with objects that you could find at a garage sale. Little useless trinkets made into art. Spoons clinking against colorful glass bottles of different shapes and sizes. Some of the chimes are made of tiny polished bones, and they have a fur base. Oddly, those sounds are the most soothing. It's dark out, and I notice that the only light is provided by a small furnace in the corner. I look down at my marred hands and broken fingernails. My eyes move along the cuts on my arms that blend into bruises. My entire body, from what I can see, is black and blue. Lowering the blanket, I look over my pale legs. The cuts threaten to become scars once they heal. All the wounds have some type of weird pulverized green stuff smeared over them. I lift my arm and sniff it, but I can't put my finger on what it is. It's herbal, that much I know. I jump when I hear him scream again, and this time it's enough to send me scrambling from the bed. I land on my side with an oomph and silent scream as I writhe around in pain on the cold wood floor. I hear something clatter outside, and I freeze. The silence is deafening as I wait. Did he hear me? Who is he? Is he one of the guys that? That thought alone sends my heart catapulting to my throat. My swollen eyes can open slightly now, but not much. I struggle to see through the tiny slits as I crawl hastily across the floor to the giant handmade wardrobe in front of the massive bed with its wooden frame. Each of the posts are thin trees with tiny branches, polished to perfection as it reaches towards the wooden rafters. The leaves look to be made of stained glass, light green with dark forest shades, I open the wardrobe doors before I crawl inside, and my nose fills with the smell of mothballs. Closing the doors behind me, I pull my knees to my chest, and it flinches the top of my thighs crush against my bruised breast. My breathing is labored from the pressure. Various furs hang above me, some reaching low enough to occasionally tickle my cheek. I do my best to hide between the hanging objects, peering through the wide crack between the wardrobe's doors and wait, expecting the worst yet hoping for the best. The throbbing between my legs is a troubling reminder of the imminent danger that could be lurking around the corner. What will they do whenever they find me? How much more could they break me? Will I survive the torture again? I didn't think that I survived it the first time, yet I'm here for some reason. Unless they kept me alive solely to use me over and over again, I still have a little glimmer of hope left in my soul. I hear the heavy footsteps move throughout the home. They're distant at first, but then I hear the distinct sound of someone walking upstairs. The footsteps near, and then they cease. The turn of a lock followed by the creak of a door causes me to hold my breath and whisper a silent prayer before the footsteps continue into the room. When the huge man blocks the crack, fearful tears seep from my eyes as my gaze follows the blood-stained fabric stretching over his broad shoulders, tendrils of crimson resembling tiny veins as they reach out towards the small of his back. The sky is massive, and my eyes follow over each muscular groove that is visible through the white, blood-soaked shirt. When my gaze travels to the back of his head, my hand clamps over my mouth. He's wearing some type of sack over his head. It automatically makes me think of field day at school where we'd hop towards the finish line in a burlap sack. The one that he wears, though, is a mask tied together in the back in corset fashion with white, dirty string. He stands there with his back to the wardrobe for a time. I'm assuming he's staring at the bed, and I'm not sure what to think. On one hand, this clearly is not one of the men that hurt me. On the other, it's a giant man wearing a creepy mask and covered in blood. He could be a serial killer for all I know. They must have left me stranded after they attacked me, and with my luck, I probably got swept away by a crazy axe murderer. He doesn't have an axe, though, which is refreshing. He does, however, have a thick chain draped over his shoulder. His head turns slightly as he looks around the room. Then he automatically turns towards the wardrobe. I can't contain the sobs or my hurried breaths whenever I see the front of the mask. The eye holes are stitched with the same dirty string, and there's no mouth. I see him, and he sees me. There isn't any use in trying to hide anymore, so I scream at the top of my lungs, causing his dark eyes to narrow as the doors swing open and reveal the true size of his massive form. I cower when his huge hands reach down towards me, but they aren't rough whenever they make contact. They're gentle as he places his hands under my arms and lifts me, and I still cry out from the pain. The thought of playing possum comes to mind, but what good would that do? This isn't some maniac walking into a building shooting up the place. No, this guy has no distractions. His focus is 100% on me, and that alone is terrifying. He holds me in front of him with strong arms, and I watch, frozen, as his brown eyes scan over my face. He grunts, turning towards the bed before carefully setting me down. When he reaches for the chain draped over his shoulder, I try and crawl across the bed, but he grasps my ankle, causing my wounded side to hit the mattress before he pulls me back towards him. Quickly, he cuffs my ankle before securing the other end of the chain to the bed, ignoring my pleas for him to let me go. There is no acknowledgement from him as he stands and turns, walking to the door as I pull at the chain and wail, ignoring the pain that accompanies each cry for help. The tears never stop, and the pain never ceases well into the night. Scream and cry and pull at the restraint as I go on to be ignored. I imagine he's somewhere smiling because I'm here. All the while, I'm trapped, devastated, and confused. I survived to become a prisoner.
Awesome.
Oh,
awesome.
Wow.
We need more of that.
Yeah. One of our listeners said that they were hooked, so that's definitely a good sign.
I was hanging on every word. That was intense stuff. I like that.
Thank you.
I like that. Beautifully read as well.
Thank you.
That's my baby. You know, I mean, I definitely stepped away from what I normally write to write this one. And so it was different and scary, but refreshing to release.
So I've been seeing a lot of posts on Facebook. The Tombstone Tourist, is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's the one that I'm working on right now. That's book number 10. And that one, it's an interesting story. It's basically, it's a very personal story, I guess. The main character is very much based on, I guess, who I've overcome as myself. And so she's a lot like looking at me and looking at myself in the mirror, or how I used to be. So it's a lot of my heart and soul in it. She's a lot of me, but in a different circumstance. So she is this interesting character. She's a musician, but she also is an oddball. She has a hard time, you know, just living amongst people in general. And so she's just different. But she's also got this horrible past that's kind of molded her into who she became. And so she's at this point in her life where she doesn't think that she'll ever meet anybody. And after a series of heartbreaks, she decides to attempt to end her life. Whenever she does this, she basically goes on like an adventure of sorts, where she goes on this road trip with this other character in the book, and they kind of travel around to different cemeteries all across the United States. So it's pretty exciting, because I'm obsessed with cemeteries anyway. So it just means that I get to write about
stuff
that I love.
I see the pictures that you post and everything. It's so exciting. It's, well, that's a weird word to use, but it is. I love to see them, and I'm following and stalking you on Facebook. But I do that, you know. We have a caller who wants to say hi to Bonnie.
Hello.
Hello.
Of course I pushed the button. Hello. Hello, caller.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
I can hear you. That's Mandy.
Hi. Hi, Mandy. I'm obnoxious.
You're what?
Loud and obnoxious?
No. Well, you're loud but not obnoxious. We love you.
Okay, I'm trying not to be loud.
Mandy's hilarious. I love her to death.
I'm a Facebook friend of her. She is. She's awesome. I don't think you're obnoxious. I don't.
Well, it's
always nice to have a caller.
Yeah.
I told you guys I was going to call.
I'm happy you did.
Also,
I knew you would, though. I was waiting for you.
Also, Bonnie. Have you ever eaten glue?
No, but I have put it in my sister's notes before.
She had some really cool questions that she was going to ask James, and one was the glue, and then, you know, there was one about if you were going to start a cult, what kind of cult would you start? I liked that question, by the way. And
also,
I'm curious to know what kind of cult you would start.
Gosh, it would be
so
weird.
Because
any cult that I would run would have to be over some cute animal. I mean, I would. It would be like penguins, the cult of penguins, or otters. You
Ooh,
can't
otters.
Leave otters,
like otters
out. They're like my spirit animal.
Yeah, what about chocolate? The cult of chocolate. Now that's
there you go.
Have a
well, we'd
chocolate
all get,
cult. Yeah.
We'd all get fat, though, if we just ate chocolate. Ooh, but it could be like, okay, you know how like in the churches
be happy,
they do the Lord's Supper, and they only do that like once every 6 months, so we'd only eat chocolate once every 6 months?
No.
There you
no,
go.
No.
No. It's my cult. We eat chocolate every day.
Every
okay?
day.
Every day. No, once every 6 months. That's despicable.
Can I wine with my chocolate? I don't like wine with my chocolate.
You can have whatever you want, but it's chocolate 3 times a day. 3 times a day, at the very least. It's just, you can never have too much chocolate. That's my motto. Although technically you probably can. To be honest, it probably would kill you.
No,
but,
I want chocolate.
What a way to go! Death by chocolate. You go out with a smile on your little fat face, definitely. So we're running out of time.
I know, the next time we have Bonnie on, we're going to have her on for the whole entire show. That's my bad that I didn't do it this time. I wanted to have her on close to Halloween, but that didn't work out. And so we definitely have to have her back. And can you tell us where we can find you online, Bonnie?
On my Facebook pages, mainly Bonnie Cap Author on Facebook, and B. Bennett as well. And then I'm also on Twitter as well. Bonnie, dang it, I don't even remember my Twitter handle.
it's okay.
Half a moment, but you can find me on there, I promise.
Wait, I have your links put up on our Facebook page, so if anybody wants to stalk Bonnie, they can go there and find her links and stalk her away, because I do. I love to see your pictures. You're so cute. I think I have a girl crush on you.
Oh, thank you.
I definitely have a girl crush on you.
Aww. Yeah,
I think James is trying to say he has a girl crush on you too, but you're doing that demon thing right now, James. So, but I wanted to thank you for coming on the show, Bonnie. And will you promise to come back and see us?
Absolutely.
Yay! Next time we will definitely have you on for the whole show. And this is the time of the night when James would tell me to say goodnight, Xtina. So goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.